good service with a wink and a nod. You need a man on a mission from God. Well, not to worry, here's Bob and Yardley. Yeah, turn up the volume, here's Bob and Yardley.
Brightest audience in the country. I am Bob Enyart, America's right-wing religious fanatic, homophobic, anti-choice talk show host, just back from Israel. What a great trip we had, 20 of us in the Holy Land. That didn't feel very holy with all the terrorism, but it did feel safe, I have to tell you that. And we're going to talk about Israel and the problem they have with the Palestinians, Yasser Arafat, and like we always do at kgov.com, we're not satisfied to talk about the problems of the world, but what are the solutions? And in typical fashion, we like to fantasize about how we would fix the problem if we, conservative Christians, had the authority over America's government. If we controlled the government, what would we do to help Israel and to resolve the Palestinian problem? What would we do? So we'll get to that shortly. We want to talk about foreign events on this program. Also, America's problem with China right now. China holding 24 of our servicemen and women hostage, prisoners. So we'll discuss that problem. And good news on the defense front, the military front. If you recall, a couple months ago, I debated a Green Party candidate from Michigan, and we talked about a missile defense program. And liberals around the world are against America building a defense system to shield our cities and our people from incoming hostile missiles. Now, why would that be? So I asked him, I had a live one on the phone with me. So I asked him, well, if there was an incoming nuke from some madman in the Middle East who bought a nuke from a breakaway Soviet republic, and it's pointed at Boston, wouldn't it be great if we could shoot it down? And how could he possibly say no? How could he say no? Well, at any rate, of course, defensive weapons are a great idea for America to own and have control over. Well, there's good news on that front. The U.S. Air Force has demonstrated a crucial component in the development of an anti-missile airborne laser. Now, check this out. We'd have a defense system, a network of airborne lasers to knock down missiles that would come from aggressors at targets within the United States. Now, the program, the ABL program, the Airborne Laser Program, their goal is to develop a system that can destroy ballistic missiles and their launchers through a beam of high-energy laser. Now, that's quite a goal to pull that off. Who's working on this right now? Well, Boeing, Lockheed Martin, Raytheon, TRW, those are the companies. That's a lot of technological clout there working on this. And TRW is providing the new high-powered laser. There's all kinds of new technology that's been produced and brought to bear on this problem. So TRW is providing a brand new high-powered laser. Raytheon has achieved this crucial milestone in developing the beam control system. Now, the goal of this is to fire a laser at the target missile during its initial boost phase from hundreds of miles away. So from hundreds of miles away, up somewhere in the atmosphere, shooting and destroying a missile and its launcher before the missile is hardly off the ground. Pretty neat idea. And what they found out so far, they've just completed successfully a test where we can now project powerful pulses of light on a small section of a missile almost instantaneously. I'd mark that as cool. That's cool. Makes me want to get back. I used to work for McDonnell Douglas Helicopter Company on our Apache attack helicopters. And so I have some sense for what the atmosphere and the feel is like working on this crucial project. And when you reach a point where you have a successful test, everybody's exhilarated. It's cool. It's great. Now, speaking of blowing up things, China has 24 of our servicemen and women, 21 men, 3 women, mostly from the Navy. It was a naval plane that went down. I think they also had two of the servicemen were from, I think one was from the Air Force and the other from the Marines, I think. And the plane was based out of an island off the coast of the state of Washington. The plane, it's the Navy's EP-3E Ares II. That spy plane is an electronic vacuum cleaner. It records a tremendous amount of information, data being transmitted at various radio frequencies, and it records it all. It records it on hard disks and electronic tape. And the plane goes up, it records everything it can find, and then it lands, and then we've got engineers and technicians who go through it, intelligence officers who try to decipher what it had collected while it was up there. Now, we were flying over the South China Sea in international waters. China claims as its territory not just the customary 200 miles of water off its coast, but most of the South China Sea. That's a big chunk of water. It's about 1,800 miles long and 600 miles wide. And China only borders it on one end, on the north. But mostly the South China Sea is bordered by the island nations there, the Philippines, Malaysia, and then Vietnam, Cambodia, Thailand. Those are the countries that for the most part border the South China Sea, except for China up on the north. It's an extremely busy sea lane. About half the world's oil tankers pass through the South China Sea. So our plane was flying in what is customarily considered the world over through agreement after agreement for many years with the world's nations. Our plane was flying in international, above international waters, in international airspace. Now, China, because they claim most that the South China Sea is rich in oil and gas reserves, and there's a few dinky islands in the South China Sea that don't amount to much. You can't build cities or towns on them. They're too small and scraggly, mostly underwater. But China and other countries like Vietnam lay claims to these islands because then they say, we get all the land around this little rock that's sticking up out of the middle of the sea. And so, in fact, most of the sea is disputed as to who it belongs to by all the surrounding or some of the surrounding nations. And China is very aggressive at exerting its claim. So we're flying above the South China Sea with our vacuum cleaner, cleaning up the air, doing a service for the world. And China sends out its planes, attack planes, to threaten our plane. They try to exert sovereignty, control over that airspace. And if we comply with that, then de facto it becomes China's. It's like if you live out in the boonies somewhere and your neighbor puts up a fence and his fence is on your property and you don't do anything about it. And eventually, after 10 years, then you're going to try to get a fence down and take your property back. It's not going to work. You have to exercise your right to access disputed lands, or you will lose it. And pretty soon, the sea and the air above it will be China's. So we have to fly there. We have to have our ships there for security reasons. So China sends up, and one of its ace pilots, its goal was to just not quite sideswipe, but just fly close enough to give our pilot a message to get out of here. And their ace pilot, he miscalculated. And there was a collision, and two of our four propellers on the plane were damaged. A wing flap was damaged, and even the nose cone of the plane apparently was damaged, which that would house a lot of radar equipment. And the China lost their plane and their pilot. Our plane tumbled about 8,000 feet before the pilot regained control of the plane's flaps. And then, in order to save the 24 lives on board, landed. We didn't have any permission to land, but it was an emergency landing on a Chinese island, Hainan. And we landed, and now our 24 servicemen are being held prisoners by China, and our plane has been boarded. Now, according to the Pentagon, our servicemen and women completed the exercise that they've practiced many times of destroying the sensitive data within the plane. They have a standard exercise they go through, primarily erasing the data on the hard drives and the tapes, the magnetic tapes, so that China cannot see what it is we're listening to. All right, now, for example, China might have a destroyer out in the sea, and an American plane, a fighter plane, not this spy plane, but a fighter plane comes near, not near enough to threaten them, but it comes within its vicinity. And so what China's ship will do is turn on its radar so it can find out exactly what's up there, how close it is, where it's headed. And then we have our EP-3E Ares II plane listening and collecting all the signals that are being sent out by the Chinese vessel. And when that plane lands, then they begin to figure it out, and they say, okay, now we know that a Chinese destroyer transmits at this frequency to find out about incoming aircraft. So that's very valuable information. If someday we're called on to help defend Taiwan, remember, China went to the communists back at the time of World War II. China, the mainland China, turned red, turned communist, and one of their leaders fled to an island off the coast that we call Taiwan. They used to call it Formosa. And Taiwan is now a free territory. And the Chinese who live in Taiwan, and the Americans and people from around the world, they are not slaves, as are the people who live in mainland China. So coming up, in fact, next week, I believe, we have scheduled men from the Taiwanese government coming to Washington, D.C., and we're to decide on the arms that we're going to sell Taiwan so it can continue to defend itself. And so one of the things we should make clear to the communist generals who control China is that if you do not return our men immediately, we are going to dramatically increase our arms sales to Taiwan, because they don't want us to sell them a bullet. And we're going to sell them destroyers and the most current planes available. That's the threat that we should give to China, because it's military men who rule China, and they only understand military threats. So I think that this is a sad thing that's happened. Of course, China could escalate and even try these men and women, put them on trial. That would be a disaster. But China, George W. Bush, this is his first test. China tests each American administration to find out their resolve, how firm they are, their strength. And they did that with every president except for Clinton. With Clinton, they used a different approach. Instead of testing him, they donated to his campaign.
Bob Enyart teaches the Bible like few others, and one of the best ways to introduce yourself to Bob Enyart's unique style of Bible teaching is with the video Mount Moriah. It's a 2-hour feature video that answers all kinds of questions about the resurrection. Is there evidence for the resurrection still in existence today? Well, this entertaining and professionally made video will show you evidence of Christ's resurrection that has remained for 2,000 years. New Testament clues which still point to Christ's actual tomb in Jerusalem. If you can't make it to Israel on the Bob Enyart tour, you can see the tomb in the video Mount Moriah. Answers all kinds of questions, folks. It proves that 1,500 years after God carved the law in stone, He carved grace in stone at Mount Moriah. And you can answer those who ask, those who doubt the resurrection. There's a mountain of evidence right here on the video Mount Moriah.
Most people choose their long-distance company right after they see one of their funny ads on TV. At Lifeline Communications, we think that you'll choose your long-distance company for an entirely different set of values. It's true that Lifeline's rates are now 12 to 27% lower than the competition, as low as 6.9 cents on weekdays and as low as 4.9 cents on Sunday. But we're the only major long-distance company which gives away 10% of its income to spread the gospel. And we're the only long-distance company recommended by thousands of major ministries all over America. Plus, if you switch right now, we'll give you 100 minutes of long distance free. So what do? If you're serious about saving money and promoting the kingdom of God, you can do both with Lifeline. Long distance with a higher calling.
Give him a call, 1-800-684-2931. And I guarantee you, they didn't sponsor the Gay Pride Parade in Denver like AT&T did. Give them a call, 1-800-684-2931.
And Bob's monthly Bible study. Join up, folks. Every Sunday night, we record a Bible study here in Denver, and we're going through the entire Bible, Lord willing. And you can sign up for $24.95 a month. We send out 4 tapes a month every month. We distribute tapes right now to over 100 families around the country. Please join up. $24.95 a month. We can send them out automatically if you sign up by credit card. Give us a call, 1-888-836-9278. That's 1-888-8-ENYART. And have you heard Bob Enyart's debate with Calvinist Brian Schwertley? Quite a debate, folks. You've got to get the tape. It's 2 hours, moderated by John Mangopoulos. Bob debates a Calvinist, and it gets into every area of predestination, free will, Calvinism versus open theism, folks. Get the video, Bob Debates a Calvinist, $24.95. Give us a call, 1-888-836-9278.
We are trying to decide here at KGov whether or not to move the program to an evening time slot, Bob Enyart Live, since we are now broadcasting live. What we're thinking is that if we go to an evening time slot, we can have a lot more people tuning in live to the program. Normally, people listen to it archived. Whatever, 24 hours a day, whenever you can get to it. Today's program, last week's program, a month ago, a year ago, just people tune in whenever they get a chance. We're thinking of moving the program to an evening time slot so that folks that get home from work, most people, and of course they could still listen to the show archived anytime at work, whenever, in the car if they have wireless internet. But more people being able to listen in the evening, and perhaps that will improve our call-ins, and especially callers regarding what we are currently discussing live on the program, since now we are broadcasting live, having overcome a technical difficulty with one of our crack new staff members. Carl figured it all out, and now we're live. But we did hire one of those, you know, those ABL airborne lasers. We bought a lease on one of those for Interland. Interland is our host provider, and they've given us some foreign policy challenges, let's just say, over the last year. But, okay, now I'd like to get to, so if you have any thoughts on that, we'd like to hear your input, but we are thinking of going live in the evening. We're thinking about that, so we'd like to let our friends know what we're planning and what we're considering. Now, I'd like to talk about Israel and our trip. We just had a wonderful time in Israel, absolutely wonderful time. In fact, we are in the process of editing together a video at many of the key places throughout the land of Israel where the location is crucial to some Bible story. The prophets, the apostles, Jesus Christ, Herod, Pilate, Caiaphas the high priest, the story of the Bible comes to life when you're in Israel. And what we did was, as we went from location to location, we had a high quality digital camera with us, a wireless mic, so that even when we were on the Sea of Galilee in a boat, we're still able to get just the fabulous quality audio and video, and we're putting it together, and hopefully we'll have about a 1 to 2 hour, we have all the raw footage, we've got to see how it goes together, but perhaps a 2 hour video, a tour of Israel, specifically highlighting the key points of the Bible story and the evidence for the truth of the Bible story that's there even after 2,000 years. All right, so our trip was great. I'd like to get to the solution to the problem there. Much of the world is calling on Israel to give land for peace, provide land for peace, give the Palestinians land so that Israel can have peace. And Chamberlain tried that back in the late 1930s and early 40s. Chamberlain tried that in England with Hitler, land for peace. And it didn't work. Gave them thousands of square miles without confrontation. Go ahead, you can take it. How much land do you want for peace? We'll give it to you. Now, while we were in Israel, I was interviewed for about 4 minutes by the Jerusalem Post for their Jerusalem Post radio broadcast, which you can get on the web at jpost.com. Click on Jerusalem Post Radio. And This was on our final, let's see, when was this? I can't recall. I think it was on this past Friday. But no, it was probably Thursday. I think it was Thursday. I was interviewed and asked about the problems in Israel, and especially the Palestinian problem, and I commented on the Land for Peace idea and said that it didn't work for Chamberlain. Land for peace did not bring about peace in Europe, and Jews paid a price, 6 million of them slaughtered by the Nazis in concentration camps, not only by the Nazis, but also by some people in neighboring countries who sided with the Nazis, whether they wore the uniform or joined the political party or not. And what I pointed out was that you cannot have peace without justice. You cannot have peace without justice. And as the Palestinians continue to, they think they're advancing their cause by killing innocent men, women, and children, you cannot just wink and make believe that is not happening. There needs to be justice. There needs to be punishment for crimes. While we were there, we arrived in Jerusalem, And the news was a baby, a 10-month-old baby girl, was shot through the head, apparently by a Palestinian sharpshooter, and killed. Now, that happened on the eve before the Arab summit was to begin. And the Arafat's goal at the Arab summit, see, the leaders of the Arab nations are often at odds between themselves and with Arafat. And one thing that joins them mostly is that they don't like Israel. It's not that they like Arafat. They can't stand Arafat. But they have a common enemy, and the enemy of my enemy is my friend, so they get together and talk. And Arafat's goal was to heighten anti-Israeli sentiment during the Arab summit so that they would be more unified and financially, militarily, politically support him more so than they had been, because he's pretty much failing at negotiating and failing the terrorism aspect of his administration, if you'd call it that. So he's pretty much failing, and his support even among Palestinians is not unified. So what Arafat calculates is, we want Israel to bomb us. I, Arafat, want Israel to attack me. I want them to attack, to bomb, use their airships, their missiles, their mortars, whatever, and attack us. And I want this to happen just before or during the Arab summit so that all the Arab leaders will be angry at Israel. So the night before the Arab summit, they send a sharpshooter and they kill a Jewish baby girl, 10-month-old baby girl, with a bullet through the head. And the next morning, they blow up a bus, or they try to blow up the bus, the bomb, the suicide bomber. It was an 18-year-old kid, and they had a video of him run on local television. And they said they had a dozen 18-year-olds, and they each one had committed to carrying off a suicide attack, killing themselves in the process of killing innocent Jewish civilians. And so he was on TV giving his spiel, and he's now dead, and the bomb that was in his car, it blew off before he made contact with the bus, so there were a lot of injured people in the bus, but it could have been a lot worse. So some of the guys in our group said, come on, Sharon has got to respond. He's got to attack now, retribution now. We're having a discussion. I said, no, he shouldn't do that because he's being manipulated by Arafat. Arafat wants to provoke a military response now to unify the Arab leaders. Sharon is too smart, hopefully, at least when it comes to tactics and strategies fighting Arafat and his Palestinian Authority. He's too sharp to be manipulated like that. He'll wait until the Arab summit is over, and then he'll launch his retribution. And so then later that afternoon, there was another bombing in a shopping center. And people say, well, isn't it dangerous to go to Israel? Well, is it dangerous to go to Denver? Is it dangerous to go to Dallas or San Francisco? Well, forget San Francisco. Let's just write that off the map. But how about New York? We were in New York for a couple days on the way back. More people have died in Israel from car accidents than in all their wars and terrorism attacks combined. So nobody says, oh, don't go to Israel. You might get hit by a taxi and killed. So statistically, the chance of, and tourists are not targeted because the Palestinians, their economy, they're suffering severely economically because of the cutoff of tourism in the West Bank, and especially the West Bank, in Bethlehem and Jericho. There were thriving communities, growing, thriving communities that are now suffocating. So anyway, Sharon did exactly what we predicted. And in fact, the next day, the Jerusalem Post, the first three paragraphs of the lead story, Mike Tiemann came up to me and said, come on, Bob, I thought you read this. And I had to look at the date and see when was it published, because it was literally verbatim what we had said Israel would do and should do. And so they paid retribution against the Palestinian Authority after the Arab Summit ended. They destroyed some of the key facilities, buildings of the Palestinian Authority. What I'd like to do after this break is talk about two things, a little bit of the history of how this problem has come to be in Israel, where two different peoples claiming that the land is theirs, and then the solution, the ShadowGov solution, the KGov solution. We like to fantasize that, well, we have control of the U.S. government. We control the government, so how would we solve the problems? It's an intellectual exercise to figure out, first, is there a solution? Is there a plausible solution? Is there anything that could be done to solve the problem? If not, you'd like to know that. There's nothing that could be done. Or is there something that could be done? And if so, most likely it's the Christians who could figure it out. And so then, what is the solution?
Twenty years ago, Christians got a great weapon. And I want to know, do you have that weapon ready to use on an atheist, on someone who believes in evolution? What happened 20 years ago? 20 years ago, Mount St. Helen blew its top. And you can see a video called Mount St. Helen, and it goes through the forming of strata over weeks and months, not millennia, not millions of years that evolutionists think it takes to create strata, and all these different canyons and log deposits, all these different things. You can find out how the Grand Canyon really formed. The Colorado River did not cut the Grand Canyon. You can see all this evidence in Mount St. Helens. A geologist named Steve Austin, PhD, goes through the evidence for you. It is not something that an evolutionist can debate. It's simply facts. We show you in the video how it formed. This is not up for debate. And how did Mount St. Helens do this, but it took the rest of the world millions of years? It stumps the evolutionist. It's a great video. You can get it here at Bob Denyer Live for $24.95. Now, I have to tell you, we have some new products for the Partnership for a Homo-Free America. We have three powerful bumper stickers. We don't do anything halfway. We have the ultimate abortion t-shirt available here at Bob Enyart Live, which we've talked about before. Now, we have the ultimate homosexual bumper stickers. The best one is a rainbow-colored bumper sticker. Starts off red, then pink, then blue, then green, then yellow, with two simple words: eliminate perversity. Awesome. Another one says, friends, don't let friends be homos. It's great. And then the third one, political correctness, the bastard child of Sodom, with a little tagline, partnership for a homo-free America. If you want one of these bumper stickers, there's $5 a piece. And you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to put them on homo cars. It's a great witnessing tool. It's only $5 to spread the word of not accepting their lifestyle. It's so frustrating to even talk about homos. And it's so great that we have the tools that you can show how disgusted you really are with homos. Because obviously the goal is to get them to turn from their wicked ways. But how will they turn if they don't know what they're doing is wrong? So you can get these bumper stickers and many other things. You can sign up to be a member of the Partnership for a Homo-Free America, $50 a year. You get a certificate suitable for framing and free bumper stickers. Give us a call, 1-888-8-ENYARD.
We're back. Bob and you're live, 1-800-8-ENYARD, 1-800-836-9278. Okay, so how did the mess develop in Israel? How did this mess develop? Well, obviously, there have been problems around the world throughout history of nations and peoples and religious groups hating one another and fighting. It's what characterizes the human race in our history. But how about the particulars there in Israel? The media would have you believe that the Palestinian Authority represents a people who want their country back, right? And Israel took it from them. So then you have to look at those claims and see, well, who had this land? And you go back in Israel's history, and they had a monarchy there. And in fact, they had a civil war, and it split north and south. And so they had dual monarchies going on for many centuries. And it was a Jewish king, Herod, that built Jerusalem into a, well, a thousand years before him, Solomon, King David's son, built Jerusalem into the envy of the world. And then a thousand years later, 2,000 years ago, King Herod, one of the greatest builders of history, an evil man, but quite the builder, created one of the greatest cities in the Roman Empire, Jerusalem. As far as the buildings and the city and the aqueducts and the wealth and the prosperity. And so we know that the history of the Jews goes way back, and what their laws were and who their kings were and their high priest, and they're going back literally 3,000 years ago to David, literally 3,000 years ago. And when David bought the land there in Jerusalem on Mount Moriah, he bought the land from the Jebusites, and Abraham bought land for a burial ground. And there was fighting, and there was the buying of land and transferring of deeds peacefully. Both of those things were going on 3,000 years ago. Then the Roman Empire took that land and occupied it, and it became a Roman province of Judea. And since when David and Saul were kings of Israel, the Jews fought against the Philistines. And so centuries later, millennia later, empires want to know what to call this land, and sort of as a romantic throwback, they call it Palestine for the Philistines. And in the 1940s, before Israel became a nation by decree of the UN in 1948, the Jews were the Palestinians. The Jews were called Palestinians. The Jews who lived there, in the land we today call Israel, they were the Palestinians. And from King David right up through until today, with Ariel Sharon as Israel's president, or prime minister, when did the Palestinians, the people today, the Arabs, when did they have control of that land and of Jerusalem? When was it theirs? And you ask that question and you go to the history books and you find the answer is never. They never had that land as their country. You ask, well, who was your king? Who was the king over that land? And they don't have a name. And you ask, well, what coins did you mint? What coins did you mint there in Jerusalem or anywhere throughout the land of Israel? And they can't point to any coins that they had minted. And what was your constitution? What were the laws that you passed to govern that land? At Palestine, the Arabs never had a country there in Israel that they ruled over. There never was such a country. Now, the people who live there today, their people and ancestors go back with roots for centuries or millennia, but it's just like people who live here in America. If you're the third or fourth generation of your family who lives here in America, it doesn't mean that this is your country, you can take it over and rule it. It just means you've lived here for a long time. But the Jews did rule that land. They did have kings and a government and built the infrastructure to have a nation. And they were deported to places around the world, exiled, by aggressor empires and nations and enemies. So when they get the economic and political capital they need to go back, they go back. And now there's a fight over who should have the land. And the Palestinians, with a willing and ignorant American media and CNN and worldwide media, and there's a natural opposition to Israel because Israel, that's the country of the Bible, and the Jews are the chosen people. And since the American media and the world's intelligentsia and our universities have a natural disinclination toward anything biblical, they don't like Israel, and they like Israel's enemies, in this case, Arafat and the Palestinians. Now, the Golan Heights. If ever you read a news article about the Golan Heights, it'll say the Golan Heights, which was seized by Israel from Syria and should be returned. And then they go on with the article. Well, Syria never had control of the Golan Heights until the 1940s. And when they got control of it, what they did, and it might have been the early 1950s, what they did was daily they attacked from the Golan. The Golan Heights border the Sea of Galilee on the east and the northeast. And militarily, you want that land if you're in a battle, because it's easy to defend the high ground. And if you got to attack, it's easy to attack from the high ground. So they would shell the farmers down below, mortars. They would shoot mortars at the farmers in the kibbutzes down below who were trying to turn the desert into a lush paradise. And for years, Jews would be killed by Syrian gunmen up in the hills of the Golan Heights. And so when, in 1967, the Six-Day War, Israel decided enough is enough, and they took the opportunity of that war to say, we're going to take the Golan Heights. And it was said to be a military impossibility because of the way Syria was entrenched and dug in. And they took it in one day in a battle. And one of the main reasons is every Jewish soldier in that battle had grown up in the Galilee with the Syrian guns firing overhead. They grew up. They had family members and friends and relatives who were killed by the Syrians firing out of the Golan Heights. When Israel took the Golan in 1967, that was the last day shots were fired in aggression from the Golan Heights, not one day since. While it was a daily experience before that, not one day since has a shot been fired in anger from the Golan Heights. Not at the Syrians, not at the Jews. If the United Nations cared about peace, they would say, it's a wonderful thing that Israel now has the Golan Heights, because peace now, peace reigns in that area where before there was only aggression and bloodshed and death and dismemberment. Now, under Israeli control, there's been nothing but peace on and from the Golan Heights. And before, with Syria, there were only soldiers and weapons on the Golan Heights. Now there are large, flourishing communities. Gorgeous, gorgeous towns. And while Syria claims that that's their land, the archaeologists have been going crazy on the Golan Heights since Israel got it back. And guess what they found? Ancient synagogues. So far, 20 of them. 20 ancient synagogues going back as much as 2,000 years. Did that land belong to Israel? Sure did. You know, the Jews didn't build synagogues in the Old Testament. That's in New Testament times, the time of Christ. They began building synagogues, meeting places to get together and read the scriptures and talk about God. Whether they understood it or not, that's what they did. And in the Old Testament, from the time of Joshua, the tribe of Reuben and other tribes in Israel settled in the Golan Heights. So we know that for over 3,000 years, that land has been Jewish land. And now the Jews are back. And is Israel a godly, righteous nation? No, it's not. Is America a godly, righteous nation? No, it's not. It's not. But even understanding that there are nations that do not submit to God, there's still matters of justice and right and wrong. And if a Jewish man picks up a gun to shoot at a Palestinian civilian, the Jews will arrest him and prosecute him and punish him. If a Palestinian man picks up a gun and kills an Israeli baby or woman or child or man, he'll be celebrated with a parade. So for that reason, we say that this conflict should be resolved in favor of Israel. Now, how do you solve the problem?
Bob Enyart teaches the Bible like few others, and one of the best ways to introduce yourself to Bob Enyart's unique style of Bible teaching is with the video Mount Moriah. It's a 2-hour feature video that answers all kinds of questions about the resurrection. Is there evidence for the resurrection still in existence today? Well, this entertaining and professionally made video will show you evidence of Christ's resurrection that has remained for 2,000 years. New Testament clues which still point to Christ's actual tomb in Jerusalem. If you can't make it to Israel on the Bob Enyart tour, you can see the tomb in the video Mount Moriah. Answers all kinds of questions, folks. It proves that 1,500 years after God carved the law in stone, He carved grace in stone at Mount Moriah. And you can answer those who ask, those who doubt the resurrection. There's a mountain of evidence right here on the video, Mount Moriah.
Most people choose their long-distance company right after they see one of their funny ads on TV. At Lifeline Communications, we think that you'll choose your long-distance company for an entirely different set of values. It's true that Lifeline's rates are now 12 to 27% lower than the competition, as low as 6.9 cents on weekdays and as low as 4.9 cents on Sunday. But we're the only major long-distance company which gives away 10% of its income to spread the gospel. And we're the only long-distance company recommended by thousands of major ministries all over America. Plus, if you switch right now, we'll give you 100 minutes of long distance free. So what do you do? If you're serious about saving money and promoting the kingdom of God, you can do both with Lifeline. Long distance with a higher calling.
Give him a call, 1-800-684-2931. And I guarantee you, they didn't sponsor the Gay Pride Parade in Denver like AT&T did. Give him a call, 1-800-684-2931.
And Bob's monthly Bible study. Join up, folks. Every Sunday night, we record a Bible study here in Denver, and we're going through the entire Bible, Lord willing. And you can sign up for $24.95 a month. We send out 4 tapes a month every month. We distribute tapes right now to over 100 families around the country. Please join up. $24.95 a month. We can send them out automatically if you sign up by credit card. Give us a call, 1-888-836-9278. That's 1-888-8-ENYART. And have you heard Bob Enyart's debate with Calvinist Brian Schwertley? Quite a debate, folks. You've got to get the tape. It's 2 hours, moderated by John Mangopoulos. Bob debates a Calvinist, and it gets into every area of predestination, free will, Calvinism versus open theism. Folks, get the video. Bob debates a Calvinist, $24.95. Give us a call, 1-888-836-9278.
Back, Bob Enyart Live, 1-800-8-ENYART, 1-800-836-9278. Genesis 15, verse 18, the Lord made a covenant with Abraham, saying, "To your descendants I have given this land, from the river of Egypt to the great river, the river Euphrates." I like the sound of that. From the Nile to the Euphrates. Of course, Saddam Hussein wouldn't like that. But so what? So while we're in Israel, we discussed the shadow gov solution to the problem. The final solution to the difficulty over the land with the Arabs who claim that the land of Israel should be theirs. Now, Barak had offered in peace negotiations, he gave more than he could possibly give, and it cost him his position in the last election when Sharon won the election. He was giving away a tremendous amount of the land of Israel, much of the control of Jerusalem, which the Jews gained control of the city of Jerusalem because the Arabs attacked. And this has happened over and over. May 14th, 1948, Israel becomes a nation. By decree of the UN says, we agree that the Jews can have their land back. The next day, five Arab nations attack their armies. Now, that land was a British protectorate, and Great Britain did not allow the Jews to own weapons. A Jewish man could not have a handgun. It was a serious crime. Imagine the day after, the Jews had weapons, but they had to smuggle them in. Imagine the day after you become a nation, five Arab armies attack, and the result was the Jews decimated the Arab onslaught, decimated them. And because the Arab nations attacked, tens of thousands of Arabs fled. They fled from their homes and their farms, and they became what today is called Palestinian refugees. And they fled not from Israeli aggression, but from the aggression that resulted from the Arab world attacking Israel, seeking to destroy them and to push them into the Mediterranean Sea. Many of those who live in the West Bank and even in East Jerusalem and in the suburbs there who are Arabs, and the West Bank and the refugees, many of them are Jordanians because Jordan controlled that land and even right up to Jerusalem. And the American media says Israel is the oppressor of the Arab world and the Palestinians. Now, there's about 5 million Jews surrounded by 200 million Arabs. One little country the size of New Jersey surrounded by 21 large Arab countries. So how is it that the Jews are the oppressors? And the Jews don't attack the Arabs. The Arabs attack the Jews, but the Jews defeat them militarily, and so they've taken the borders that they think they could defend that are safe. And the Arab world, the Arab leaders, try to incite the turmoil in Israel by encouraging the battle, Arafat's goal, to take control of Jerusalem and as much of the land of Israel as possible right now, and to continue to take more and more eventually. So here's what, if the shadow government, if we right-wing Christians were in charge of America, here's what I think we should do. We should communicate this plan, we formulate a plan, and we communicate it to the Arab world leaders. And we say, unless you resolve this problem in Israel, this is what we will do. We will end all oil imports by the year 2010, beginning immediately, unless the Arab world concurs. We will order the governors of all 50 states to proceed to inform the power utilities that they have the green light on building nuclear power plants. And we will give our entire automobile industry complete 100% tax exemption for designing, building, and selling electric cars. Our goal by the year 2010 will be to destroy the world's oil industry. And therefore, from the Black Hills of Tennessee, or from the Badlands of South Dakota, we can crush Saudi Arabia and Iran we could destroy those governments and those economies simply by refusing to purchase your oil. We will immediately open up federal lands for oil exploration and for drilling, and we will begin a concerted effort to tap the frozen methane in the oceans, which is thousands of times of more greater reserves than the entire Arab world combined. So that's our plan by 2010. And the economies of much of the Arab world are, to an extraordinary degree, they're dependent on oil exports, and their number one customer is America. And if we change our economy here and we move off of an oil-based energy economy to solar and wind and especially nuclear and electric cars that don't pull up to the filling station for petrol but to get their batteries recharged, that will affect the world because these companies will begin exporting these cars. You know, when you make a few thousand of these cars every year, you can't benefit from the efficiencies and the advancement in technology as when you make millions of them each year. And that's the beginning of the problem. And we would tell Jordan and the surrounding Arab countries to repatriate the Arabs in Israel into their countries. Bring them back in. Our energy plan would undermine the support in the Arab world for Arafat. And then we tell Jordan and Syria and Egypt and Lebanon that we want you to repatriate these people into your countries. Not keep refugee camps on the borders, but bring them in and build villages and cities and roads and farms and repatriate them. And if you don't, from Colorado and Oklahoma and Alaska, without firing a shot, we will destroy you. That's your option. If you do what you can to work with us to solve this problem, then we'll let the world of energy and power proceed as it will. Otherwise, we, America, will begin a concerted war effort. Not with bullets fired from barrels, but with our economy. Now, are you going to help us solve the problem? Or are you going to starve? This is Bob Enyart reminding you to do right and risk the consequences.